This is the Unconquered Podcast, unbiased, unrivaled, and unconquered coverage and analysis of Florida State football.
In Florida State,
we won national championships and ACC championships.
It's caught! Touchdown official, Kelvin Benjamin!
Back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting a little banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something I can really do this.
Game over! Those are the champions of college football!
Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Staples. Today on the podcast, Wayne and I will field questions from the NOLDigest.com premium board, and we're going to basically treat this as a mailbag for the 2014 season. So let's get started. Joining me again is Wayne McGahee from Noel Digest, of course. And today we're going to do a little bit of a question and answer session about this upcoming football season. We had people on our premium board over at Noel Digest ask specific questions that we were going to then field today on this podcast. So we're going to go ahead and start from the top. 954 Noel asks, if you are the opposing team's defensive coordinator, how would you try to stop Florida State's offense? Okay, well... why don't you sit in that chair to start there, Wayne?
Well, the best way to do that is to keep them off the field. I mean, you try and eat up as much clock as you can. You know, 3-4 yard runs, 3-4 yard passes. You know, just
so. In other words, you have to beat the Florida State defense.
Yes, in order to beat the Florida State offense, you have to be able to beat the Florida State defense, and I don't see any team on our schedule being able to do that.
Yeah, I've always, by the way, been that whole keep the opposing offense off the field thing has always infuriated me because it's conventional wisdom, but here's the thing.
See,
in order to keep them off the field, you have to stop them. If you're keeping them off the field by there being like 2 and 3 play touchdown drives, it doesn't do you any good. So, you know, that whole thing about, well, you know, if they can just keep the offense off the field, that means just stop them, right? So, I mean, yeah, it means, you know, you might want to say, well, you know, they're the better team, so we want to reduce the number of possessions overall in the game. But you're still running into that issue of efficiency. You have to stop them more times than they stop you, or you still lose.
Absolutely, but it... The way that, you know, I'm saying it is, if you keep them, say, if you limit the possessions to, say, 7 for each team, like if you can really slow the game down, you know, that's less of a – you still have to stop them. But if you stop them once or twice, you have a better – like you have a better shot of doing it in, you know, 7 possessions than you do – than you have in doing it at 9. You keep the game closer. There's really no way to stop this offense completely. I mean – there's just too many weapons. There's too much talent. You know, the offensive line is just too good. You're not going to be able to stop them, you know, repeatedly. You know, there's no defense out there that's going to be able to stop them repeatedly in any game this season.
Right, but the real question is, if you're in the defensive coordinator spot, what do you do? Because, I mean, at that point, you're just saying, well, I'm hoping my offensive coordinator is a little better than my offense is a little better than us because – we're going to give up a lot of points, you know, per possession, so they better score more points per possession than, you know, we're facing. Oh, and take a long time doing it. So, you know, at that point, that's still, you know, you're basically at that point saying, well, I'm just going to lean on the other coach. How would you do it as the defensive coordinator is the real question here. What are you going to do to try to limit what this offense can do? How do you stop this offense? Let's say out of 7 drives, if you can limit to 7 possessions over the course of the game, let's say you need to realistically limit them to no points on, say, 3 drives of those 7, so they score no more than 28 points. In order to have a chance to win, how do you do that?
The simple answer is you can't. How do you try?
I don't know that I agree with that. I think it's possible, but go ahead.
The way that you try to do that is you take away the big play. I mean, you play safe. You take away the big play, and you make them, you know, chew the yards down the field. If you can do that, there's more chances for, you know, mistake. Jameis loves the big play. He's not afraid to go for it. And as we saw against, you know, Miami last season, sometimes that You know, that came back and bit him. So you take and you keep everything in front of him, everything in front of you. You make him chew the yards.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. I absolutely agree with that. And I think that's what you have to do against this offense. And you know, last year, Jameis Winston was just incredible. He just chewed up the blitz. I mean, he just destroyed the blitz. I mean, looking at the numbers, actually, I'm pulling them up right now. Because I remember they were just insane. Going into the national championship last year, Winston was 70.6% against the blitz, 20 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, and 12 sacks. Yeah, that's probably not the best strategy to blitz them, to blitz Winston, because he does get rid of it so quickly in that context, and usually to the right spot, and he's able to do so down the field, and he will hurt you. So what you have to do is you have to find a way to, I would zone blitz some, you know, I would try to bring 4 guys, but the thing is you have to be good enough to get pressure with 4 guys, and against an experienced offensive line with experienced backs, that's probably not going to happen as much. I mean, even though Pender and Williams haven't played as many game reps yet, they do have experience in the offense. They know who to pick up. The offensive line is extremely experienced. So what you have to do is you have to rely on trying to get as much pressure as you can with 4 rushers, maybe 5. And I would try to go 2 safeties high and do everything I could. Tell my defensive backs, you keep everything in front of you. My safeties have to keep everything in front of them, and force Winston to be patient and to check down every time. And, you know, and Winston at times last year, because of some footwork issues in the pocket, there were some times where he sailed some balls. And some of them were not intercepted, and most of them were not intercepted. But he did sail a few balls, and there are a couple that, you know, in certain contexts might get picked. So what you hope for is that he sails a ball here because of, you know, bad footwork or pressure or something, and you get lucky and you get an interception. You hope that, you know, maybe a running back, you know, fumbles a ball, you know, because they're throwing it a bunch against your 2 safety look. You hope that maybe you can get a hit on Winston with you know, a 4-man rush, and, you know, cause some sort of long yardage situation. Or maybe, you know, there's a bad exchange or something. You want to force Florida State to run as many plays on offense as possible. And I think that's even more true this year than last year, because you look at this wide receiver crew, you look at this running back crew, and they're going to be a big play offense this year. I mean, you look at Kermit Whitfield in the slot. The thing you have to do is make sure he doesn't get a step, because if he gets a step, it's over. There's not a person in playing football at any level that's going to catch him if he has a step. So what you have to do is make sure that your defense is drilled on pursuit angles, on making sure that they're sound in coverage and taking away everything downfield, so that, you know, make sure you keep a 12-yard gain, a 12-yard gain. Make sure you only give, you know, you can give up those little chunks, but force things to force Florida State to get into the red zone and actually have to punch it in. And, you know, once Florida State gets into the red zone, yes, they've got a great offensive line. Yes, you've got, you know, you're still dealing with Carlos Williams and those running backs and Nick O'Leary and, you know, Winston being very good in the red zone, but everything is compressed. You now don't have to worry about getting beaten over the top. You don't have to worry about how good Winston is downfield against the blitz. And you're rolling the dice. That's basically what you're doing. You're saying, I'm going to roll the dice and just force Florida State to have to execute when things get really tight down in the red zone. And hopefully I can force some field goals. Maybe I can force 3 field goals instead of touchdowns. And now, out of 7 possessions, they might have scored 49. With 3 field goals, now the max that they're going to score is what? 38. So, you know, that's what you're trying to do. And then maybe you get 2 stops. Now they're all of a sudden at 24. So suddenly, you know, if you can roll the dice, like you said, if you can roll the dice, that's you know, you're going to try to do that, force them to execute in the red zone, and hopefully your offense can actually beat the, you know, beat the defense well enough to do that. And that's where I think you're right in this sense, that Florida State is the more talented team. They'll be the more talented team against everybody they play this year. And generally speaking, I think the best approach for teams that are the less talented team in games is actually to slow the pace. Because, again, like you said, you want fewer trials so that if you happen to win the fluky play, you've got that much more of a cushion. And I think Florida State's going to push the tempo a little bit more this year than last year. They're around the middle of the pack in terms of tempo last year. Expect them to be just a little faster this year than last year with how they're doing things as well. They'll be above the middle of the pack there because they're comfortable with their depth. And they're not as worried about protecting the number of snaps that guys get at this point. Now, if a guy goes down, that may change a little bit, but that's how I would approach it. And it sounds, you know, I mean, that's how we would approach it, I guess.
Nope.
All right, let's move on to the next one. The next question comes from JREM 23, and he says, what should we expect from a linebacker rotation? We have so many: Smith, Thomas, Levenberry, Oligwe, Northrop, all the freshmen, etc. How would you rank all of them, and who do you think is on the field the most or least? So that's the first question he has. He has another one that we'll get to in a moment. That's a tougher question, I think, in a lot of ways, because, I mean, the other one's really, you know, you're just rolling the dice. On this one, I think, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how that rotation shakes out. I'm not sure the defensive staff knows how that rotation is going to shake out just yet.
No, probably not. Levenberry and Northrop are still fighting for that starting spot opposite of Terrence Smith. I will say that Terrence Smith will be the linebacker that's on the field the most. For the least, you either have to go with one of the freshmen or you have to go with Oligwe, who's, you know, going to be out for an extended period of time of the season.
Yeah, you know, I actually think it's possible at this point, and I wouldn't have thought, given that he was an early entry, but I wouldn't be surprised if Kane Daub actually, if he redshirted, although I don't think that's going to happen. But, you know, I think he's going to be one of the lesser, one of the guys that plays less in terms of on defense. I think the reason he won't redshirt is he's probably going to get some good time on special teams. But yeah, I think the freshmen, Purifoy, Daub, they're probably not going to get a whole lot of time this year because they do have guys in front of them. Hoskins has struggled some with some injuries, so it'll be interesting to see where he's at. But I think your main guys this year really are, I mean, obviously Terrence Smith is going to be the guy. He's going to be on the field pretty much for every meaningful, I think he'll play as much as anybody, just about every meaningful defensive snap this year, he'll be on the field. But then I think you've got Levenberry probably plays the second most, Northrop the third most, and then probably Matthew Thomas there, just depending on how quickly Matthew Thomas actually gets healthy. I'm still not super optimistic about how quickly Oligwe is going to be back. If he's truly back and has some pop in his step by Clemson, then I'll revise that and I'll say he probably gets the third or fourth most snaps on the year out of that group, because I think he'll eventually take a lot of the snaps away from Chris Casher on that outside. But at this point, that's what I would expect. I don't know about your expectation there.
I would agree with everything. I think that Jacob Pugh's also going to get a lot of reps in the role with Matthew Thomas and Casher, depending on how long Thomas takes to come back. So, but I think that Jacob Pugh will definitely play the most out of all the freshmen. I completely agree with what you're saying on Daub and Purifoy redshirting. Daub and Purifoy are both working with the scout team right now, so you have that. And I think that Levenberry beats out Northrop for the job. Jimbo named Levenberry the starter 2 weeks ago, and I don't see that changing.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, he gives an element of size on the interior that they really are going to, I think they're going to need more this year than they did last, in part because of some of the teams that they're playing and some of the strength inside that say Notre Dame has and that Florida will have late in the year. But, you know, and he's got some extra length as well. Now, Northrop, I think, is going to get more, maybe more plays. I wouldn't be surprised if he plays a little bit more when things are spread out. So you might see a little bit of a switch, you know, in terms of situation with those guys, because Northrop, you know, maybe just a little more mobile than Levenberry. Although I think Levenberry's not very far behind Northrop in that regard. But I wouldn't be surprised to see a little situational switching with some of the linebackers. The one guy they don't have to situationally switch is Smith, because he, you know, he can run sideline to sideline, and he's got size, and he's got ridiculous length. So I mean, in terms of ranking them, I think Smith is a clear bell cow of that group. The rest, it's really tough. If Oligwe was healthy, he would be my number two on that list.
I agree with that. Oligwe's, if he was healthy, he's the second best linebacker of Florida State's unit.
Yeah, I mean, I just think he flashed so many times last year. I mean, anytime he was on the field last year, you know, something good happened. And that's that, you know, that when you've got a guy with that kind of instinct, with that kind of explosion, I think, that speaks for itself. Out of the rest of them, you know, I would put Thomas and Levenberry about the same. Northrop just a notch below those guys. And then you get to the freshmen, of whom I've said since the recruiting process was going on that Jacob Pugh is my favorite of the freshmen. I think he's got a ton of potential as a pass rusher down the line, and as an overall complete edge player, I think he's going to be very good. I'm not as sold on Kane Daube. I think he's I didn't see as much in the way of instincts from him at different points. In his high school film, there's been some indications that's carried over into camp and through the summer as well. He also isn't as quick. He's not as as sudden as either Purifoy or Pugh. I think Purifoy is a good player. The interesting thing will be for me, as good as this linebacker class was from the 2013 class, I'll be interested to see whether, you know, three of those guys, two of those guys, or only one of those guys winds up really being a stud at Florida State. In part because I think this next group this is the 2014 class, in the 2015 class, in this next class, it's possible that they would land a linebacker or two that ends up taking snaps away from those guys. So, you know, that's where Florida State is now. In terms of where some of these guys are going to be in the future, even the guys that are really highly regarded coming in, they're going to have to fight for their jobs the next year if they want to get on the field, because the group behind them is going to be just as good or better. So I think it's an interesting situation. It'll be a lot easier for everybody to see sort of how things are going to be after this Oklahoma State game this week. He finished with this, with the following question. He said, "I know you said upcoming season, but who do you think will be our starting quarterback in 2015? Now, that is not about this upcoming season, but it is a worthwhile question. So you take this one first.
I'm going to go out on a limb. I think Cosentino takes the job. I think in the end he's a better quarterback. I don't think he could start right now, but I think that once he gets Jimbo's system down, he is constantly with Jameis Winston. Everything that Jameis is doing, Cosentino's right behind him. If you watch our Sights and Sounds video, you'll notice that Jameis, when they're running out, Jameis is the first one out there, and he is sprinting. And Cosentino is right behind him, sprinting to drills.
He's his shadow.
He is his shadow right now. And I think that's going to serve him well, and he's going to end up with the I think he's going to end up winning the starting job in the spring next year.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with Jameis Winston. a little bit of wishful thinking there in terms of from the Florida State side. In actuality, you know, I don't think Winston is ultimately, when he has to make that choice, I don't think that's where he goes. But that's still a possibility. I mean, maybe, you know, it's maybe Lloyd Christmas level odds, but. But it's still in the realm of possibility, and obviously if he, you know, happened to return, then he would be the next guy. But I've thought about this a lot, and I just don't know. because, you know, again, here's the where I think it does favor a guy like Cosentino. Fisher, as a rule, will favor the younger player if all things are equal. This is what I told people in the Winston Coker Trickett battle of a couple springs ago. There are a lot of people on the Noll Digest boards who just expected Trickett to get the job because he was, you know, the backup the year before. He had more experience. And what I tried to explain to people is, if you know the way that Fisher works, he tends to favor, if all things are equal, if the players are pretty much, if the performance level in practice and otherwise, if the level of consistency is more or less the same, he's going to favor the younger player. Now, that seems counterintuitive to some people that, you know, you should reward the seniority and things like that. That is not the way that Fisher thinks. Fisher's view is the reason that you play seniors, the reason that you favor seniority is because those guys are better. They've been in the program longer. They should know what they're doing better. They should be more productive. If they're not, then the other kid is going to be better by the time he's there. He's at their spot. By the time, if a freshman is as good as a junior as a freshman, by the time he's a junior, he's going to be that much better if you give him those extra reps. So that's Fisher's approach. Now, given that, I think that does favor the younger guys in the program. So Cosentino, I mean, certainly has a really, really good shot at being the starter in 2015. The question is just going to be, again, he's got to develop. I'm encouraged by what I've seen from some of the development in him mechanically, from some of the stuff he picked up, a couple bad habits in the last high school season and through the all-star camps and such of this last year. And some of those seem to have gone away in some of the stuff we've seen, you know, in the pre-practice type stuff or in the early practice stuff that we've had. So that's encouraging. If that continues, that you know, that's solid. He's got, you know, if he shadows Winston and learns the offense well, he's probably the guy because he does have more physical tools than what you've got with McGuire. But McGuire's not going to go down easily either. And I think people do underestimate how, you know, how much he could actually do in this offense given, you know, the skill talent around him. I mean, there's a certain point where if you just put the ball in the right spots, you're going to be successful in this kind of offense. So it really depends on – it so much depends on who develops and how well that it's sort of – you're reading tea leaves at this point to try to get there. But I do think it's important to understand that Fisher will go with the guy who's performing better. And if it's close, he's going to go with the younger guy. So, you know, that's just the rule. Now, I mean, the really interesting question to me is, let's say Cosentino starts in 2015, but Malik Henry arrives in 2016. Now we've got a very interesting situation because Malik Henry is, you know, I think he'll redshirt in 2016 maybe. But 2017, Cosentino might be a third-year guy, and Henry would be a guy that, you know, there's some good reason to think that he's the best quarterback recruit that Florida State has been after since Winston. You know, there's some rumblings from inside the program that would suggest that Malik Henry's the best guy in you know that they've gone after since Winston. So, you know, that's another interesting one is, okay, let's say you start with Cosentino as a redshirt freshman and then maybe he plays as a redshirt sophomore, do you even hope that he goes pro quickly to put Henry on the field? I mean, these are some really interesting things. By the way, I do think Florida State will get Malik Henry. They've been putting on the full court press on that. I think the Jameis Winston factor will certainly help there. But yeah, it's a very interesting question in terms of quarterback in the future at Florida State. The one thing we know is that as long as Fisher's at Florida State, the quarterback position will be good.
Absolutely. I mean, I completely agree. I think, you know, right now they're slated to get Henry. The I've heard that the academic scandal at Notre Dame didn't really help their cause there. So
go ACC.
And also, you got baseball. So
yeah, go ACC. And the academic scandal seems to be a trend.
Yeah.
Welcome to the ACC. Anyway, let's go ahead and move on to the third. Well, really the fourth question, but our third third poster. Larry Knoll 76 asked, if you had to pick a weakness or area of concern, what are your thoughts? Now, he said experience at wide receiver and interior line on both sides of the ball comes to mind, but he'd like us to sort of comment on that. You go ahead and field this one first.
Before fall camp started, I would have said inexperience at wide receiver, but after I'm completely, you know, no doubts at the wide receiver position right now. The freshmen look great. Christian Green is performing well. The fact that he's kept his job so far says a lot to me because those freshmen look real good. Interior line, it says there's good and bad here. It says a lot that a guy like Keith Bryant is on the scout team, but it also, and, you know, a guy like Nottie is, you know, playing. But the fact that Nottie is playing, rotating in with the first team, raises a few question marks about the guys behind him. So if I had to say one particular position, I would say the interior defensive line, just because, yeah, Nottie is really, really good. But how good is he? How much of it is he's really, really good? And how much of it is the guys behind him just aren't performing? So I would go with that until we see just how good Derek Nottie is in game.
Yeah, I mean, I think that basically hits it on the head. I'm not worried about anywhere other than really that spot on the interior of the defensive line. I think the defensive line is going to have to get better. You know, this there's one other thing in addition to that. I mean, I'm not terribly worried about wide receiver. I mean, the receivers are going to have to grow up fast, but I think that's a position where when you've got a Jameis Winston at quarterback, it's easier to grow up fast because he's going to raise the level of play of those guys because he's going to put the ball in the money. He's going to demand that they be there. And, you know, it's one of those things when you're a wide receiver and you've got a quarterback like that, it makes you better. Like you know where the ball's going to be. It's easier to catch the football because it's going to be in specific windows. You know, he's throwing to body parts instead of throwing to, a range, you know, a basic area. You know, it's things like that make such a big difference at receiver that I think, you know, over the long haul, the receivers are going to grow up pretty quickly. And like you said, Christian Green does help, you know, pretty significantly if he can live up to anywhere near the talent level he has in terms of physically, then, you know, we're looking at an all-time great offense. But the defense does need to get better. Defense is still a long way from where they finished the year last year. You know, the secondary has been a little bit banged up. And as good as they are as a starting five in terms of a five-man secondary where you've got, Darby, Williams, Ramsey as three corners that, you know, nobody has three corners at that level, and you've still got Tyler Hunter and Andrews at safety, that's as good a group as anybody has in the country at secondary. But if you look behind those guys, it's not quite as strong. So if one of those guys does go down, you know, that's a potential concern. I mean, I think, so far we've seen Nick Wasem, who's got some experience and he's played well in the, in his time before. And, you know, you've got Marquez, help me out here. Marquez White. Yes. I was wanting to say Walker for whatever reason, but, you've got Marquez White as well, who's a terrific athlete, but again, he's a little raw. You have those guys as the next guys, as corners there. It's just not quite as much depth as you had last year when you had those guys plus LaMarcus Joyner and plus Terrence Brooks, who was an eraser at safety. So, you know, that's a potential point of concern if one of those guys goes down. And, you know, I think the interior defensive line has to get significantly better. They have to get more physical. They have to be, and they're going to have to be able to keep the linebackers clean over the course of the year, especially with younger linebackers. They're going to have to keep the linebackers clean over the course of the year in order for the defense to be successful like they were last year. I mean, Jernigan, and, you know, not just Jernigan, but McAllister and McDaniel were so crucial to that defensive line success last year that they're going to have to get better quickly to do that. My other concern comes from some rumblings from inside the program that this team is still a bit soft. There's some concern that they, you know, that especially early in camp that they came in and the coaching staff was having to push a little bit harder than they had to last year with this on this team, that they're not quite as hard nosed as what you'd like to see. And there's, you know, when you look at last year's team was not exactly a hit you in the mouth kind of team. They were just so good. And, you know, they were very businesslike, and, you know, they responded when other teams hit them in the nose, but they weren't really the kind of team that would come out and, you know, and really play with a physical edge. They had a couple guys that did that. You know, Joyner was always playing on that edge, but they didn't have a whole lot of those playing on the edge physically guys. And this year's team doesn't either. I think Ramsey's trying to, you know, be that guy, and he has a chance to be that guy. But they need a little bit more of that edge. I'd like to see a little bit more of a physicality. You know, that's something that I think you want to see early on. And you know, there's some concern that this team needs to toughen up just a little bit. So that you know, how well do you respond to adversity kind of question. So that's going to be interesting to sort of trace over the course of the year. And then, you know, of course, the next question is, are they going to need to go through much adversity over the course of this year, given their schedule and given the talent gap? Who knows? It could wind up being a situation like last year where nobody's really close enough to make for it to make much of a difference. So those are my concerns in terms of weaknesses and where this team could wind up having, you know, having some potential weak spots. I think everything else, I mean, if you lose a running back, they've got running backs. You know, obviously, if you lose Jameis Winston, that's disastrous. But, you know, if you lose one guy on the offensive line, they've got depth. You lose one guy at receiver, they've got depth. You know, they've got a lot of depth everywhere, but they're still a little thinner than you'd like at the defensive back position. Like you said, the up front with, you know, the defensive tackles, there's still a lot to see. Those young guys are going to have to mature quickly. Lawrence Stample's going to have to be much better than he was last year. You know, there's a lot of room for them to improve on that interior, to be, you know, to not be a soft team on that front seven. And you know, that you can't be soft on the front seven and win in a playoff situation. So those are the concerns, I think, going into the year. All right, let's go ahead and move then into the next question. This one also comes from Larry Knoll, 76, and he said, as I recall last year, you commented that Jimbo likes a double tight end package, but after Hapley's injury, we had to go to something different. I understand we're now back to the double tight end package Jimbo wanted last year. How does that change the offensive scheme? So first of all, how much have you seen actually two tight ends on the field so far? You know, in the early practice walkthroughs and such. That's one thing that we need to talk about right away.
At the very beginning, Hapley wasn't out there very much. He was dealing with a concussion, so we didn't see it very much. But lately, they have been running it during walkthroughs, one or two plays, you know, every practice, and we're seeing a lot of it. They really like Hapley as a blocking tight end, and he catches the ball very well for someone, you know, for a tight end. So, you know, he provides an extra weapon out there and an extra blocker. So it really changes up the scheme because, you know, if you're four wide on offense, you're probably going to throw the ball, and the defense knows that. But if you're going two tight ends with weapons like Hapley and O'Leary, you could still throw the football and be just as productive because, let's face it, O'Leary's probably one of the most dynamic tight ends in college football.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that it does in terms of going to the two tight end kind of package is it allows you to balance the defensive front. Defensive fronts have a hard time. Most defensive fronts, the way that defensive coordinators like to work is they like to try to get, you know, the whole game up front is about gaining a gap. Who can get an extra gap where? So, you know, offensive line coaches and offensive coordinators in the running game, as often as not, what they're trying to do is they're trying to, by alignment or motion or whatever, they're trying to gain a gap somewhere so that there's a gap in the defense and then you can run through that gap. defenses on by contrast are lined up so that, you know, they don't lose a gap. I mean, that's what they're really after. And so when you're in a a single tight end setup, you have five offensive linemen plus a tight end. So that makes six front players, which basically, you know, it gives a sort of it's a slightly unbalanced look in terms of with the center being one of them. So you have one side that's sort of a strong side that the defense can kind of key off of. Now there's six guys, so it's an even number, but one side is clearly the strong side. So the defense then can sort of orient, can gear off of which side, strong side, weak side, and they do a lot of defenses do a lot of their stunts and a lot of where they line up and all this based on which side is the strong side. What the two tight end kind of alignment does, and this is why Fisher likes it, is it forces defenses to have to deal with a balanced offensive front. There's no strong side or weak side when you're in a too tight situation, and that's difficult for defensive lines and for defensive fronts, because now where do you line up? You almost force defenses to have to line at least one or two players up head up. And if you're better than those guys head up, then you can maul those guys. It's easier to gain a gap. And then if you want to motion one of those tight ends, in O'Leary's a better player when he's actually in an H-back situation than off the line than he is as an inline blocker. What that does is it allows you to move that guy around a little bit and, you know, maybe gain a gap by, you know, motioning a tight end. And then, you know, you run to that side and the tight end can get a little bit of a hook block on the outside, or maybe, you know, you can run a guy out just a little further and you're creating a little bit more space for your backs. But the biggest thing is you're forcing that defense to balance out. And a lot of teams, actually, what they do is as soon as you go to two tights, they immediately check to a two safety look. So you've got two high safeties. And in particular, if that's a quarters look, so you've got actually a cover four where there's four guys responsible for four separate deep zones, safeties actually take a step forward. Each safety is a little bit forward from where they would be in a cover two look where they're responsible for deep halves. If those safeties come up in quarters, Fisher loves, absolutely loves playing against quarters. There's actually in a lot of Fisher's passing game, there's an automatic alert against quarters to throw the post, because basically the outside guy over the wide receiver has the deep outside quarter. If the receiver threatens that outside quarter and then cuts across his face, that guy, there's no way, outside of that guy being Deion Sanders, that he can make up that ground and protect against that over the top to the inside. Whereas the safety is responsible for both an outside running gap and run support and that deep zone. And if that receiver is able to get over top of that safety at all, then the quarterback just has to throw it over the safety. And it's as easy a throw down the field as you can get as a quarterback, to just basically, you just throw it and just don't overthrow your receiver and don't underthrow, you know, below the safety. Just put it out there. And you've either got a big play or an incompletion. And, you know, if you got a guy like Winston, that's going to be complete 80% of the time. So, you know, what that does is it allows you to balance out that defense. A lot of times you're forcing defenses to check into two safety, especially quarters looks. And then what you get is you get that opportunity to hit play action down the field. And you're looking at a guy like Rashad Green running free down the center of the field as Winston is throwing in play action. So that's the sort of thing that you're getting out of that two tight end situation. The other thing is in short yardage, obviously it helps to have two guys that can block the edge. A lot of Florida State's short yardage issues over the past several years, going back to say 2011, or, you know, even when the offensive line in say 2009, the offensive line in 2009 was a top five offensive line in the country, but there were some issues in a few games in short yardage. And most of those came from tight ends missing blocks, especially in 2009. They were very good when Kaz Porowski was blocking the edge, but any of the other tight ends, especially once Porowski got hurt, any of the other tight ends, they were inconsistent on the outside, and they let guys cross their face, and you got all sorts of problems in the short yardage situation. Again, what that two tight end kind of situation does is it allows you to balance teams up and to be able to run a little bit of power stuff on the inside. You can run, you know, inside zone, you can run outside zone, you can run power O, these sorts of things in short yardage from a balanced front when things get tight and you know that you've got guys that can block the edge and keep guys from just crossing in and blowing that play up. So there's a lot of things that the double tight end package does that Fisher likes. And it all sort of goes together, having to do with that balance, giving the run pass option, and in particular setting up that deep play action pass that Fisher really wants to go after. And that's sort of a hallmark of his offense that we haven't really had much of a chance to see because the personnel hasn't been there in the past. And as far also one other thing, as far as the offensive scheme, you know, the other thing in terms of how does that change the offensive scheme? It actually doesn't change the scheme. I should make that clear. It doesn't change what they're actually running. By and large, it just changes what the defense presents and sort of what options are going to be available when you get to the line of scrimmage. They're still going to run primarily outside zone, inside zone. They're not going to become to look down the list a little bit. Arbiter Noel asks, does Florida State begin to look like Stanford with the two tight end package, or do the running backs Williams, Cook, and Pender prevent that from happening with their power, speed, and elusiveness? Florida State's not going to look like Stanford regardless, because Stanford it's a different kind of offensive scheme entirely. They're running a downhill offensive, you know, running game where they're running a lot of power O, a lot of pulling guards type stuff, more man blocking than what you see at Florida State, where most things are going to be on the zone blocking side, where, you know, it's designed to create creases for cutback runners. For Stanford, it's you know, power O. You're going to pull a guard, lead through the hole, and, you know, basically try to create a seam for the back. He knows what hole he's going to run through, and he's just going to try to run through it with power. That's their bread and butter. That's not going to be Florida State's bread and butter, regardless whether they're in the two tight end package or not. They'll run it maybe a few times. Fisher, you know, in the past has run quarterback power actually a number of times, back when they had Christian Ponder, who ran that play pretty well. But by and large, when you've got the offensive line that Florida State does, they'll look more like what Alabama does, where Alabama is much more of a zone running scheme than what Stanford is. It's just a different kind of offensive line approach from what most of your top level college teams and pro teams are running at this point, where the zone scheme is more favored by and large. It's one of the reasons that Harbaugh went with the power scheme at Stanford, is that he felt it was unusual enough at this point that it actually gave them a little bit of an edge, given who they could recruit. Okay, we can move on to the next one now. Atkinson 1224 asks, could you envision a scenario in which Mario Pender has more carries than Carlos Williams at the end of the year, assuming both players are healthy from start to finish?
If the only way this happens is if Florida State blows everybody out and Pender plays, and, you know, they pull the starters and Pender plays most of the game. That's the only way I see it.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't see this happening. In part because of Cook's presence. I think you're going to see all three backs get a lot of carries. You're going to see three backs over 100 carries this year. I think Carlos is going to have the most carries. He'll probably have in the neighborhood of 200 carries on the year. And I figure Pender will probably have somewhere around 125, and Cook will have somewhere probably just around the same as well. But you know, I think the difference there is that Carlos offers not just the speed and home run ability that Pender has. And, you know, Carlos is not quite as fast as he was, as fast as Florida State fans remember him when he was 220 pounds. But he is 235 pounds at this point. And in this offense, Fisher's going to want that sledgehammer. He's going to, you know, if teams are going to want you to, and as I suspect, if teams are going to want to keep everything in front of them, go to safety looks and basically tell Jameis Winston and the Florida State offense that they're going to have to execute down the field and do so in smaller chunks and not give up big plays, well, that plays right into a guy like Carlos Williams' hands. You're looking at a 235-pound sledgehammer that's going to be running into seven-man fronts. Well, say hello to a lot of 15, 20-yard runs and then a few where he breaks out, because of him being, you know, that talented. So, you know, I think that fits very well with the kind of thing that the kind of fronts that Florida State can be playing against this year. That's not to say that Pender and Cook won't have their chances, and I think they'll be successful as well. But that big back really, really fits well with what I think Florida State's going to be facing this year. So we'll go ahead and move on then to our last few questions, all of which come from JD Harris 86. The first question of these is, what new, if any, defensive wrinkles will we see this season? That's a tough question. Why don't we go ahead and why don't you field this first?
It is a very tough question because we only get a certain amount of time, you know, on the field before they kick us out of practice as media. And we see what Jimbo wants us to see. That's the best way to describe it. We see what Jimbo wants us to see. But the only thing that we can really, you know, it's really stood out is we discussed this in our last podcast about the defense, is them going with the really heavy fronts. You know, they tried it last year. It didn't work. They're trying it again this year. There's not really, you know, much else out there. Everything's going to run the same. You got to remember, this is Jimbo's defense. This is the defense that he wants run. So that's what Pruitt and Kelly both ran.
Yeah, there's not going to be much change, I don't think. But, you know, I do think we'll see some new wrinkles. I think there'll be more variation in terms of what fire zone packages we see. Last year before the season, we'd done a piece on what the fire zone actually is. It's a zone blitz with a cover three behind it. And in Florida State's scheme, what they're doing is it's not a true cover three. It's actually a man zone sort of matchup. It's sort of a matchup zone. If you think like basketball, sort of a hybrid situation where they match up and there's guys responsible for deep zones, but they're going to match up with the guys. They're going to match the receivers depending on how the receivers release off the line of scrimmage. So I think we'll see more variation in terms of who comes from where in terms of different blitzes. But for the most part, the basic principles are going to be the same. I think the biggest difference from this year to last year is not actually going to be in terms of wrinkles or scheme, but more in terms of the different level of pattern matching that the secondary and linebackers have gotten to. So last year, they didn't have the full opportunity to implement everything in terms of all of the rules for pattern matching. You know, it's a tough thing to coach. I've talked to Fisher about this some, how difficult it is to coach pattern matching, in particular when you don't have a whole lot of time and personnel that's familiar with it. And, you know, he's sort of nodded to it. He's like, yeah, it's tough to coach, but boy, it's a headache if you get it right. And, you know, that's where they're going to be. I think the secondary is going to be that much more, and the linebackers are going to be that much more schooled and more prepared to be able to run through their rules for where they're supposed to be, who they're supposed to match up with and all that more quickly, which leads to more hands-on footballs and presumably more turnovers. That's basically what happens. So I think that's the biggest thing we'll see. I do think we'll see some more jumbo packages, you know, as they experiment with that a little bit, depending on what personnel they're playing against on offense. But by and large, it's going to be the same defense because, like you said, it's Jimbo's defense. This was not the Jeremy Pruitt defense, which I've been chuckling a little bit in the preseason here because I keep hearing about how Jeremy Pruitt, you know, is a proven defensive coordinator who's really going to make a difference for Georgia this year. And I'm sitting there chuckling going, isn't this the same guy that people were criticizing Florida State last year for hiring? Like, you know, that they were questioning, like, who is this guy? I mean, he was a high school coach just a few years ago. Like, how, you know, just some random guy from Alabama, you're going to put him in charge of your defense? And now all of a sudden he's proven because of what happened at Florida State last year, and he's going to turn around the Georgia defense in a year. Well, I'm not sure that that's really the case, because like you said, this is Jimbo's defense. Yes, Jeremy Pruitt was the guy who implemented it last year, you know, sort of was the front man there, but it was implemented as a staff with Jeremy Pruitt, Charles Kelly, with Sal Sunseri. Those guys, were sort of the primary guys in how this defense was put together, and two of those guys are still on staff, and it's going to be the same defense. You know, Odell Higgins teaches technique more than he teaches scheme, by the way. That's why I left him out of there. So,
yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see how Pruitt does at Georgia, because he stepped into a great situation. one of the first articles that I wrote when I came on board was about the amount of talent that Pruitt walked into. He doesn't have that at Georgia.
And their secondaries after the dismissals, their secondaries in trouble this year. So it's the opposite situation from last year at Florida State.
Yep, they don't have the athletes to play the type of defense that Florida State ran last year, and Pruitt's going to have to figure it out for himself. I'm interested to see if he can, because I think he's a very good coach, but I think he's getting a little more credit than he deserves.
Yeah.
Because of who he walked into.
Yeah, I think he's an excellent coach, but he did walk into the best secondary in years last year with the combination of corners and safeties that he had to work with, and he doesn't have that at Georgia this year, and that's why I'm going to go with one of my fearless predictions, a preview of my fearless predictions column from that I'm going to be releasing here in the next day or so, that I think Clemson's going to beat Georgia again to open the season here, in part because of what I think is going to be some problems defensively at Georgia, that they just don't have the personnel to negate what Clemson's going to want to do, even though Clemson doesn't have the offense that they had, in say 2012. I think they'll be fairly comparable to 2013, maybe just a notch behind, but I think it's going to be interesting to see how they do in terms of the Pruitt defense up there. At any rate, I don't think Florida State's defense takes a big step back. They just need to get better and more physical up front yet to be on the level that they were last year. All right, then he also then follows up with, I know you've been high on Derek Nnadi, DeMarcus Christmas, and Rick Leonard. How much do you envision those guys contributing this season? That's also a good question. I'll field this one first. I actually think Nnadi is going to take very close to starter minutes most of the year. I think he's stepping in as one of the most prepared defensive tackle recruits Florida State has brought in years. He's come in better than Timmy Jernigan was as a freshman, and I think he'll have a similar impact to what Jernigan did as a freshman. So I think there's about 800 snaps per defensive tackle position available on the year, and I think Nnadi probably takes about 250 to 300 of those 800 snaps. That leaves another 250 to 300 for Niall Lawrence Stample, and then another about 300 for the other defensive the other nose tackles on the roster. So I think he takes about, say, 250 of the maybe 300 of the 800 snaps that we would expect through the, say, ACC championship game at the defensive tackle position. Christmas is in a similar but not quite as advanced role. I think he's going to be a guy that's probably going to take in the neighborhood of 150 to 200 snaps. He's going to be behind both Goldman and Holland. I think he's going to push for more time against bigger fronts. And he will get his time, but I think he's going to be just a touch less playing time than what you get from Nnadi. I mean, he's really more in the third range on that depth chart, whereas Nnadi is sort of 1B, I think, by the end of the year You know, maybe even 1A by the end of the year at nose. So I think Christmas is more like 150 out of 800 snaps. Leonard is an interesting one. I'm very interested to see how quickly he projects, because he was maybe my favorite recruit from the class this last time through. And I think he's going to get time. I'm curious to see how much time he gets, in particular, how much time he gets when it matters, because Edwards came off the field the least of the defensive line last year, in part because they just didn't have a guy that they felt could make enough of a difference at that spot. And Leonard is a guy that may be able to step in and do some of that this year. I think he's going to get some looks. So I think early in the year, you're just going to see him, you know, in sort of garbage time and maybe get some snaps, you know, for, you know, a couple here or there when they're on the opposite side of the field. But by the end of the year, it'll be interesting to see, you know, how much he actually gets. I think you're more, again, looking at, you know, more like 125 kind of snaps situation there, you know, maybe more depending on how you're going to divide things up with in garbage time. He's probably going to get the bulk of garbage time there. So maybe that pushes him over 200, you know, snaps on the year there. But I think that he's going to contribute a little bit just in terms of keeping guys, you know, keeping Edwards, you know, being able to give him a blow here and there. It's just going to be a matter of, you know, how quickly he picks things up to be able to do that. But I think that's sort of how it breaks down for those guys. I don't know if you have anything different there, Wayne, or if you've got some additional stuff to contribute there, go for it.
Yeah, I would say that with the way that DeMarcus Walker is playing right now, it's actually going to be good for Leonard, because Walker is playing so well, they feel comfortable putting him opposite of Mario Edwards, which adds more snaps to Leonard. Walker has been playing in catcher's spot a lot in the past couple weeks, because catcher's in the doghouse right now, but he stays in the doghouse. But Leonard is going to be able to step in behind Mario and get some of the snaps that that Walker would have gotten, because Walker's playing so well that they're going to find a way to get him on the field.
Well, and it also tells you how confident they are in Leonard that they're willing to make that move with Walker. See, so it works both ways. So I think you're going to see more Leonard than anybody maybe expected coming into this year, because he's a guy that certainly comes in as a little bit, you know, he still needs to gain some weight up top. You know, needs to progress a little bit physically, but he is a physical freak. He's got the base. Don't be surprised to see him block a couple kicks this year with his length. You know, he's a guy that's going to be a special teams terror, because he runs so well at that size. So, you know, that's some additional contributions to kind of expect from him.
Rick Leonard, just throwing this out there, Rick Leonard's actually on the kickoff coverage team. That's how well he runs.
Yeah. Oh yeah. He runs that without a doubt. He runs like a deer, man. That guy, and with that length, I mean, you in the open field, he's got it. You know what, a 6'9", 6'10" wingspan to stick out there, and it's just hard to get around those guys. So, you know, just a huge asset in the special team situation, and you know, he'll be a guy I'll want to put a helmet cam on watching kickoff coverage a little bit this year. So, in terms of then we got, you know, finishing these questions. Most of the rest have to do with the linebackers, which we covered already to some degree. But JD Harris 86 asks, Casher is the primary Jack linebacker. Who's the number two behind him? Jacob Pugh, Matthew Thomas. Speaking of Thomas, what role will he play this season? Is he an inside or outside backer? And so we can talk a little bit about that.
Well, right now, Walker is working at the Jack linebacker, like I mentioned. Casher's in the doghouse. Casher's playing some, but Walker's getting the bulk of the minutes on the field right now. Behind him, Jacob Pugh was actually working in at the second team, because Matthew Thomas is hurt right now. But with Matthew Thomas, you know, once he comes back, he actually plays both. He gets rotated. They like to cross-train all the linebackers, but he's going to rotate in between the Jack linebacker and the inside.
And that gives you a lot of scheme flexibility in terms of how they like to do things. I mean, they can put him on in an inside position and then all of a sudden slide, you know, Mario Edwards inside a little bit or something like that, and then move Thomas outside in a pass rush situation, or do all sorts of little moves like that off at the line of scrimmage to, you know, to get additional pressure with a guy like that on the field. I think that's really his role this season, as he, you know, once he gets healthy again, is I think he's going to be more of a third down kind of backer. And in particular, you know, he'll be in that. I think he'll get some snaps to be more of a pass rush kind of guy when they're in, you know, say the dime package and things like that. You know, I think that's where we'll see more of him. The final question is Lorenzo Featherston a for sure redshirt? I ask because I wonder, will Kelly try to utilize his pass rushing ability off the edge this season?
I guess I'll take this one first. He's not on the scout team right now. He has not had a scout team jersey in his hands. They've got one of the walk-ons, Tyree St. Louis. He's working with the scout team right now, but Featherston isn't. So that indicates to me that either A, there's nobody on Oklahoma State, you know, that's like him at all, which is, you know, quite possible considering, you know, he's 6'7", 240, and runs extremely well. Or that he's not going to redshirt. I'm going to lean towards him not redshirting because there's not that much depth at the defensive end position right now. But I don't know how many snaps he's going to get. I'm going to estimate on the smaller portion size there. But he's going to be in on special teams. You're going to see him a lot there, and you may see him at defensive end. You'll probably see him in a lot of garbage time.
Yeah, it's an interesting one for me because I would have thought he would be a redshirt going in, but then at the ACC kickoff, Fisher was just raving about his athleticism and what he had to offer, and talked like he was not a guy that was a for sure redshirt. I think if he does play, his major role is going to be in the special teams area. You know, the question right now is that he's had, you know, he did get dinged up, had a little potential concussion at one point in camp. And so, you know, I think he's a decision that's going to get made over the first couple games. He may play the first couple games, and then, you know, if he gets dinged at all or whatever, they may put the shirt on him and you know, have an injury red shirt. I wouldn't be surprised if that was the approach that they took with him, to, you know, give him some time out there the first couple games, and if he gets dinged at all, then you put the shirt on him with less than 20% of the snaps on the year, that particular rule. So I don't think he's a for sure redshirt. I don't know that he's going to get much time when it matters as far as his pass rushing ability. I think Matthew Thomas is really still that guy. And I think Jacob Pugh is still ahead there if they're going to put a guy there. But I think looking forward to next year, I think Featherston is going to be a guy that's going to be in the mix quite a bit because of that pass rushing ability. All right, well, that's all we have for our questions from the board. Thanks, everybody, for submitting those. We'll do this kind of podcast a little bit over the course of the year. But, so for Wayne McGahee and the rest of the Noel Digest staff, I'm Jason Staples. Thank you for listening to the Unconquered podcast. We'll be with you with several episodes over the course of this week as we build up to the football season, which starts in just a few days. Thanks for listening. We'll be back soon. I made this.